And in on the right, you have the base station from one operator in one frequency band. You see the difference is the difference is here. You see you have some cluster of points, and here you don't have any cluster. There are two reasons for which there's no cluster in one frequency band. First, if two base stations which operate in the same frequency band are too closed, you will have too much interference for the users. Second, you have some obligations of coverage. An operator is forced by the regulator to cover everybody everybody, whatever. So, if you run the statistical test on the configuration with all the base station, it's more or less compatible with the hypothesis that it is Poisson. If you look here, you see that it's not Poisson. It's clearly you don't have the cluster points you have in any realization of a Poisson point process. So the question is, which is the alternative model for one frequency band and one operator? And the second question is, okay, I have a model. Suppose I have a model for each frequency band. How could I explain that when I superpose all these realizations for each frequency, I get a Poisson point process? More, can I quantify the speed at which it's converged to a Poisson process? So it's not new to use over point processes for the modeling of base station. Distinguished professors who are in this room already investigate the problem. It seems that since you have repulsion, you can think about point process with repulsion. There are a lot of such processes, like Gibbs processes, like hardcore processes. But these processes are maybe easy to describe, but you can't do many computation with them. On the other hand, when you look at what are called determinantal point processes, DPP for short, it's less easy to describe, but once it is described, it's very easy to make some computation. Relatively easy, say. So that's why it's interesting to deal with this kind of processes for modeling processes with repulsions. So there is a lot of sort of processes of determinantal point processes. You have the Gauss processes, the Cauchy, the Gamma, and you have the Ginibre. So I like the Ginibre. I will show you why. He has several interesting properties. So what is this process? This process is defined at the beginning as the eigenvalues of a complex matrix. So each entry of a matrix is a complex Gaussian, mean 0, variance 1. And you take a matrix of size n, you compute all its eigenvalues, it's a point process in R2 or in C, and then you let n goes to infinity. This is the Ginibre point process. You can say alternatively that the correlation function of this process are defined by the determinant. So the determinant of what? That's why I said it was not so easy to describe these processes. You consider this kernel, and then the correlation function at x1, x2, xn is the determinant of the huge matrix, which is k of x1, x1, k of x1, x2, k of x1, xn, and so on, and k of xn, xn in the bottom right. So you see, since we have a determinant, when x1, say, is equal to x2, the first two columns are equal. So the determinant is zero. So this encodes the fact that the particles can't be close together. Because if x1 is close to x2, it's likely that the determinant will be small. So the probability to have points which are close to each other is relatively small. Yes. Okay? No. So, but as is, you have no freedom. There is no parameter. It is everything is defined. I have no degree of freedom. I can't even increase the number of points per unit of surface. I can't do anything. So we just generalize, apply some randomization to the Gini process to make it more parametrizable. First, you apply a beta thinning. So beta is something which is between 0 and 1. And first, and second, sorry, you apply the dilation of rate lambda times square root of beta. So the square root of beta terms, if lambda is equal to 1, say, you will have the same number of points per unit of surface as in the original process. If you apply a big lambda or a small lambda, you will increase the number of points per unit of surface. So it gives you two parameters. One parameter, lambda, which controls the number of points per unit of surface, and the number of beta, which more or less controls the dependency. As beta is equal to 1, everything is very repulsive, and when beta goes to 0, as is said below, you go down to a Poisson point process. So beta measures the dependency among the particles. So that's what looks like a Gini point process with 500 points, if I remember well. So you just apply a thinning and then a dilation, and then you get these things. So you see here now you have some points which are close, not clusters as in a Poisson point process, but close points. So we ran the fitting procedure on all the data we got for Paris. And you see these four, those who are not French, these are the four mobile operators. Orange is the historical one. And three is the last one. And you see there are much things we can do, many things we can say about this table. For instance, you see here, you have for LT2600, the intensity is almost the same for the three major operators, but here you have a beta which is 0.9 and here a beta which is 0.6. But what does that mean? That means that for Bouygues, they have a relatively dense network, but they choose to densify it at some hotspot. When you look at the repartition of Bouygues, you see that it's not completely regular. You have some district of Paris where you have more base station than some others. On the contrary, for Orange, they decided to deploy their base station uniformly in the whole region. There is no privileged district. So, and you see here, you have a very low number of base stations per unit of surface, and a relatively large beta. That means that they just put the minimum base station they could to cover. After that, there is a problem of capacity to say that they cover Paris. Okay.
Are the lambda units here per square kilometer? Do they have any units, the lambdas? Or
I think it's something like per square kilometer. But maybe there is a factor pi in the fact. I don't know. I don't remember exactly. So now you see that we have something which works well, pretty well, for every single frequency band. And the question is, when we superpose these different Gini process with different lambda I and different beta I, how fast can we get a Poisson point process? So if we speak about convergence, you must first speak about topology. So we want to speak of convergence about of configuration. So what is a configuration? A configuration is a local finite set of particles. So it's written on the Polish space Y. Say Y is a subdomain of R2. Okay. But it can be generalized to whatever you want. So this is just the notation we have here. And at the beginning, the topology you put on the set of configuration is a vague topology. It means that omega n tends to omega if when you consider compactly supported function, the integral of f d omega n tends to f d omega. Okay. As is, it's not very easy to define some to handle. It's a very nice topology. It's a Polish space and so on and so forth. But you can't do any computation with that. You can, on the contrary, define some distance and configuration, but will lead to distance between distribution of configuration, which are easily tractable. So the distance between two configuration is very raw. It's the total variation distance. Since we have a point process, the total variation distance is only the number of different points between the two configuration. It's not very difficult. And now you define what is the Lipschitz functionals. Lipschitz functionals is something where the f of omega minus the f of theta is less than the distance between in total variation between omega and eta. The simplest Lipschitz function you can imagine is the function which to a configuration omega associate the number of points of omega in A. This is clearly Lipschitz. And what you can define as the distance between distribution on configuration, it's the contour of retribution distance, and it's the supremum of the Lipschitz function of the expectation of f over p minus the expectation of f over q on q under q. Okay. So what's the link between this distance and the previous one? We prove in a former paper that if the Pn tends to Q for this contour Rubinstein distance, then Pn converges in distribution to P to Q, where with this definition, Pn tends to Q means that FdPn tends to FdQ for F vaguely continuous for the vague topology. Okay? So, the thing is that this formulation here of a distance is very well suited to what is called the Stein method. So, what do we have in the Stein method? We have first the target space. We want to show that something converges to a Poisson process. So, this Poisson process is defined on a configuration space over Y. What do we have at the beginning, we have a superposition of different, of independent point process. So we have the copy of eta y, n copy, since we will superpose n process, and each one has its own distribution. And then we have a mapping from the initial space to the target space, which is here, you have n configuration, and you superpose all these configurations, and then you are in the same space as the Poisson point process. Okay, so keep in mind this picture with two spaces, one on the left, one on the right. You have a free measure, this one, and the image measure of the measure here by the map T. That's always the same framework for any Stein method. So how does it work? It's some sort of homotopy between the two measures. You have here pi lambda, which is the distribution of a Poisson process of intensity lambda, and here you have Gothic V, which is the image measure we want to compare to the Poisson. So what you are going to construct a family of distributions, such that for any t here, pt star of p lambda is equal to p lambda. So there is something which is constant here, and here pt star of v converges to p lambda, and you want to compare these two. So what you are doing is you are going back in time. Here you know the difference is zero, and then you go back and you control at each time the difference between these two the increments along the process, and that's why that will give you the bound between the distance between Gothic V and P lambda. So that's the idea of the Steinmuthen. So how do you construct PT? And then you will construct a Markov process with value in configuration space, such that it is ergodic and its limit is the Poisson of intensity, Poisson, the distribution of a point Poisson, of a Poisson point process of intensity lambda. And you also want that if you start from pi lambda, the distribution is pi lambda at each time s. And that is, what you call PT star is in fact the semigroup of this, it's the image measure. PT star of mu is the image measure of mu by the semigroup of X, which is denoted by PT. Okay? So if you have a Markov process, you have a generator, and that's it. You ask that the generator is such that LF dm is zero if and only if m is equal to pi lambda. This is work we do on the right hand side on the target space. Okay. So here we want something which works for Poisson point process of intensity lambda. What is this? What can be this process? It's a process which is known as a Glauber process. So you take a Poisson on the line of intensity lambda of y ds, and you have times here when you have an arrival in the Poisson in the Poisson on the line. All the particles you will consider will have a lifetime of which is an exponential random variable of parameter 1. And what you are doing is start with an initial configuration. The particle here has an exponential lifetime. And then at S1, there is a new particle, and this particle is put in the domain according to the measure lambda divided by lambda of y. I renormalize lambda so that it's a probability measure. Independently of anything else. At time S2, I have a new particle which is put in the domain according to lambda. And then at time S, you look at the particle which are alive. That gives you the Markov point process. Everything is exponential, so you have a Markov process. At each time, it's a point process. It's clear that you will forget the initial condition, because every particle of the initial condition will eventually die very quickly. So in the end, you got a Poisson point process. Okay, so if you look at the generator looks like this. You have two parts. You have a part here which corresponds to the birth of a particle. If you write it like this, you see here that this is the distribution according to which you will decide where your new particle will be. And here this is the rate of birth of new particles. And here you have, here this is the rate of death of any particle. You have, say, this number of particles in your configuration, and then this number is here to say that you choose any particle uniformly among the set of particles. So this gives you the expression of a generator, and you can, in this very simple case, compute exactly the distribution of x of t. It's a point process, which is the superposition. Its law is exponential minus t finning of the initial condition, plus a Poisson point process of control measure 1 minus 1 minus exponential minus t times lambda. So you see that when lambda tends to infinity, this tends to 1 and this tends to 0. So this proves the ergodicity. Okay, so what I would like to say is you can put this picture in something which is known for years, which is the Dirichlet structure. What is the Dirichlet structure? You need here an operator, L, and you want that you should have integral of Lf d mu is equal to 0. When you have such an operator, you can construct the Markov process which is associated to this operator. And the thing is, either you get, you define L and you get Pt, either you get you define Pt and you get L by this formula. And you have another a third object, which is the Dirichlet form. The Dirichlet form between f and g is the scalar product of L, f, and g. And if I give you the Dirichlet form, you can refine L by this scheme. And if I give you L, I give you Pt, and you give you you can compute also the Dirichlet form. You know, there are some. It's equivalent to have either the Dirichlet form, either the semigroup, either the generator. Okay? And it will be some relatively useful. Okay, so what do you do now? You just apply the fundamental theorem of calculus, which says what? It says that P infinity of F minus P0 of F is the integral of from 0 to infinity of d over dt of PTF. Not very complicated. But by definition, d of dt of PTF is LPTF. And P0F is F. And since the thing is ergodic, P infinity F is the integral of F with respect to the stationary measure, which is denoted by mu. And now you integrate everything with respect to V. And you have your. Remember that you want to estimate the supremum of this quantity over the Lipschitz function. So you are reduced to estimate the supremum of this quantity with respect to Lipschitz function. So what is the form of L? L is of this form. You have two parts in L. One part is an integral, which is relatively nice because this is a deterministic measure. There's no problem at all with that. This one is more difficult because you have here some sort of integral, but sort of random integral. It's a series, but it's usually called a stochastic integral. And what you want is to transform that in order to be to be comparable to this term here. So what you will do, you will integrate by parts. That's the key trick of the Stein-Dirichlet-Marjavin method, is the integration by parts. So what is integration by parts? An integration by parts is something, usually it's f prime g is equal of integral of f g prime. You have a prime on f on the left, and on the right you have no prime on f. But you have something, it's g prime. Here it will be relatively different. You set that you consider the difference operator, which is dy of f is f of omega plus y minus f of omega minus y. And if you have a Poisson process, you all know the Campbell-Maker formula. Campbell-Maker formula says this kind of thing. And if you do some very simple algebra, you end up with this formula. It's really completely equivalent. There's no difficulty from one to the other. And what does it say? It says that when you have dy of u, so imagine this is u prime on the left, on the right, I have u. So it's something like an integration by parts. And it's in the... when you do Malliavian calculus, it's called integration by parts for Poisson point process. Okay. Okay. So what's really... How does it fit within the previous structure? In fact, you may see that when d star d, so d star is the adjoint of d, is equal to L, the L I spoke about before. And it's the same thing. If I have d, I can find L. And if I have E here, I could find d. In some sense, d is the square root of L. But it's not a self-adjoint square root. It's one square root, and it's one interesting square root. There's no automatic way to find d when you are given L. But that means that if I define d, I could in principle define L, define pt, define e, I could define everything. So you have a whole structure, which is Dirichlet, Malliavian, everything you want. So, but the question... Sorry, I have no mouse, so I'm forced. Okay. The question now is, we want to compute this thing, but we are here on the measure V. Measure V is the image measure of our superposition. It's a measure of our superposition. So it's not a Poisson point process. Otherwise, I would have nothing to do, since I want to compare to a Poisson point process. So the question is, what is an integration by parts for a general point Poisson process? Point process, not Poisson, sorry. Then you have to introduce the Papangelo intensity. First, you consider the Campbell measure, and then you assume that it's absolutely continuous with respect to lambda times p. And the Papangelo intensity is the Radon-Nikodym derivative of the Campbell measure with respect to this product measure. Intuitively, you can think of Cx of omega as the probability to have a particle in X given that you have already seen omega. Okay? It's the contrary of, it's the opposite of a prime measure, which gives you the probability to see omega given you have a particle in X. Okay, for instance, for a Poisson point process, it's C is equal to 1. For a pairwise Gibbs process, you can easily compute the C of X and Y, X and omega. It's, you see here you have the double sum of pairs of points in omega, and here you have only a single sum. It's very easy to compute. Just use the definition and it works. So question is, for instance, what is it? What is the Papangelo intensity for GNIB process? I told you before that I like GNIB for several reasons, and one of the main reasons is the following. When you have a determinantal point process, it's very hard, if it's given on a domain, you need to have the decomposition of an operator, an integral operator. You have to know its eigenvalues and its eigenfunctions to be able to do some computation. So if you are given an operator on a big domain and you want to restrict on a smaller domain, there's usually no way to compute the eigen decomposition of the operator of a small domain knowing the decomposition on the larger domain. The thing is that for GNIB process, for circles, for balls, you know exactly how to compute this decomposition. The trick is that the functions which are the basis of which are useful for defining the Gini process are orthogonal on every B of zero R, whatever R, for the measure dx dy. So z is a complex, it's x plus iy, and you integrate with respect to the Lebesgue measure over R2. So it's very easy, just change the make a polar change of coordinates, and you will see that they are orthogonals. So what are we doing? We are considering alpha and square, which are the coefficients to normalize these functions in L2 of B of zero R. And then you consider this quantity, this kernel. You see here, it's this is the nth eigenfunction renormalized the same year, and then you have here a function alpha n over 1 minus alpha n. And what is C? So C of Z0 and Z1, Zn is the determinant of G of Za, Zb. Here you have all the points, Z0, Zn, and here you have only the points on the Z1 to Zn. It's not that easy to compute, but at least it's an expression. And you may hope to be able to do something. And in fact, you are. So now, we know that we have a tool which is the Papangelou intensity, and why is it useful? Because we have the G and Z formula, which says that, which is a sort of generalization of the Campbell-Maker formula, which says that you, when you have this expression, where here you have a stochastic integral, here you have a random term, a random number of terms in the sum, here you transform it with just a deterministic integral, but you make here appear C of Y and omega. So I told you before that the Campbell-Maker was equivalent to the integration by parts on Poisson process. The G and Z formula is equivalent to the integration by parts for general point process. The thing is that you need to put to consider the it looks simple, but it took me around 20 years to achieve, to complete this proof, to have an idea of what we have to prove. You have to put here a CY of omega, and you have to put here, if you remove the C's, you will have the exact formula I gave you for the Poisson point process. Okay. And it's not very, it's not that easy to prove. First, you have to guess what it is, and then you have to prove it, and it's a corollary of several computations we made with a former student of mine. Okay, so we have now this this integration by parts. So we know what D is, so we know what D star is, so we should be able to compute L. And L is given by the more or less the same thing. You know the def part doesn't change, but the birth part, here you have to to twist a little bit the birth rate process. That is, the birth rate is given by the quantity in red. And here, once you have a birth, you put the you put the particle according to this measure. So it's not uniform anymore. It's not it's more complicated than it was for Poisson process. So X is the associated Lauber process, and you may make your math and see that L is D star D. So you have something which is completely similar to what we have on the Poisson process. Okay, so now, where was I? I want to compute this thing, and L is given by that. And now, it's not... So what do I have? I have on the left space, I have mu I, which is a point process, I know only one thing, that with their Purpangelo intensity with respect to their reference measure lambda I. On the right, I have a Poisson process of intensity measure lambda, and I have my map T, which is to endpoint process associate their superposition. So what we have to say is that you see, if you remember well the definition of the Purpangelo intensity, you have the Radon decodim of the Campbell measure with respect to lambda times P. If you, instead of lambda, you put lambda I, we just have the Radon derivative of lambda I with respect to lambda, which will appear. So you want to see lambda to put to express all the Purpangelo intensity with the same reference measure. It's very easily done. The thing here is that I didn't really compute the Purpangelo intensity of the superposition, because here you see I need to know what is omega I. I would have to put the expectation, the conditional expectation of omega I given omega. But actually, I don't need it. So this expression is sufficient for what I want to do. So I have this term, which is a stochastic integral. I apply the integration by parts. So I get here the d lambda. And then here, this is the Purpangelo intensity of the superposition. And I don't know it, so I want to go back to the Purpangelo intensity of each of the subprocesses. So I use the previous lemma, and I get here this kind of expression. So now you see, I'm happy because I have d lambda here. I wanted to compare something with d lambda also. So now, when you put it all together, everything is simple. You get here 1 minus the sum of the Purpangelo intensity. You can't expect better. So you are not finished. There is one little problem here with this term. You don't know how to bound it. So it's a usual trick here. It's dy of PTF is the PTF. You take a Poisson, the Glauber process associated to the Poisson process, and you add one, you compare the at time t, you compare you have a initial condition omega, and you put a new particle, and you want to know at time t what is the difference between the Glauber process started with only omega and the Glauber process started with omega plus x. It's completely trivial because all the particles are independent one from the other. So as soon as this particle died, there's no difference between the Glauber process started with only the circles and the Glauber process started with the circle plus the cross. But the probability that this particle is dead at time t is exponential minus t. So it's very easy to prove that dy of ptf is exponential minus t pt of dyf. This is just the idea which is behind that. So that gives you that, but now remember that f is Lipschitz. And something which is Lipschitz, whatever the definition you can take, if it's well defined, it has a derivative which is bounded by 1. So now dy is less than 1, but pt of something which is less than 1 is less than 1, and you have all these terms vanish, you have just exponential minus t dt, which is 1. And what you get in the end is that the distance between Gotik V and P lambda is bounded by this quantity. This is very general. I don't assume anything about the CI, just that they exist. Okay, so if we want to go back to our initial problem, we have some Gini processes with lambda ni and beta ni, and we superpose them. Of course, the intensity of the limiting Poisson will be the sum of the intensity divided by p, because in the definition of the Gini process there is a pi somewhere. And that is the limit you could expect. And what you see in the end, that is the speed of convergence, is c over n times the supremum of the beta ni. So we have two things there. You have the first thing, that is the rate of convergence is in 1 over n. Second, we can compute explicitly c. There's no problem. It's not a there exists c. You know exactly what it is. And you see that the speed of convergence is linked to the supremum of the beta ni. But that's something which is reasonable, because if all the beta ni were zero, we would add some Poisson process. And if you add some Poisson process, at the end you get a Poisson process also. So it's normal that you have a zero here. Okay, the very same techniques can be applied to show that when beta tends to zero, lambda beta Gini tends to a Poisson with a speed which is bounded by beta. And in fact, I show you the result for the superposition of Gini. You may think that it's very complicated to compute things because of the relatively complex expression of C for a Gini point process. But in fact, you don't need. We started by the Gini point process, but in the end, you don't need anything of the Gini point process. You just need one thing. We say that a process is repulsive if it satisfies this. That means, you see, eta is less than omega. So you have a configuration and then a larger configuration. And then you put a point at x. It's repulsive if the probability to have a point at x is weaker when you know more. But you have, you have a two-point configuration, which is, the small one is eta. You add a third point, which is omega. And you want to say, okay, the probability to have a point at x given omega is less than the probability to have a point at x given eta. This is the idea of repulsivity, because you see, the more you have particles, the less chance you have to have a particle in x. So the new particle here pushes away x. But we didn't even need that. We need a weak repulsivity. That means just for C of x of omega is less than C of x of empty set. And it's true for if it's repulsive, it's weakly repulsive, of course. And this is sufficient to prove that if you take a family of weakly repulsive point process, you have this bound. Here, this is the probability to have 0 point. So 1 minus nu ni of empty set is a probability to have more than 1 point. It's supposed to be small, because when you want to superpose a lot of point process, if you want that it converge, that means that each process should have a very few number of points. So this is very small, and this is, you see, just something which is, you take the expectation of the Papangelou intensity, which is more or less linked to the first order correlation function. So it's you can see the previous result as a corollary of this one. Thank you.
Today we are a bit behind. Can you have maybe there's still time for one, two short questions?
In the application example, now you have these different frequencies and different operators. Now, is the assumption that these Ginebra processes are independent? Is that true in practice? Because you could imagine that they're actually sharing base station powers, locations, so they would not necessarily be independent.
Actually, we didn't look at that. Yeah, true.
Thank you.